Now, as I said, you know, you're running for mayor. Not all of us are going to do that. I definitely don't have the capacity to do that. But I think you'll agree with me. It's true, isn't it, that we can all make a difference? Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about making a difference. But I think it's easy to feel discounted from making a difference to ourselves or to society because it seems such a massive thing. And I know that we share a passion for making these things accessible to everybody. So could you give us some advice or ideas to anybody listening to support them in beginning to make a difference in terms of themselves, but also to any wider initiatives? Hello friends, and thank you for joining me for the Way Forward podcast brought to you by me, Fliss Goldsmith, and Co-Design Coaching, where we create your optimal life together. Today, you may well find yourself green with envy because I am sat across from the shining light, the unstoppable force and rising star of the Green Party, Frank Adlington Stringer. Frank, thank you so much for stopping by to have a chat with me today.
Thank you for having me in. It's a pleasure to be here.
Oh, you're so, so welcome. Frank is here to talk to us about making a difference. But before we dive into that fascinating arena, allow me to tell you a little more about fabulous Frank. He was born in Chesterfield in the late 90s. And after completing his A-levels, he worked a while, travelled a while, and then set his cap to studying politics at Nottingham Trent University. Since then, he's worked tirelessly, becoming a parish councillor and then district councillor, becoming the first elected Green in North East Derbyshire. Frank is passionate about the planet, connecting communities, spending wisely and making every penny count. And he's now running to be the first ever Mayor of the East Midlands. So I think it's fair to say that I've come to the right person in order to talk about making a difference. With all that said though, Frank, people listening might think, well, hang on a minute, it's all well and good Fliss spouting about this guy making a difference, but politicians, they don't struggle like the rest of us. What do you say to that?
I know how much of a struggle it is. It's a weird world, the world of politics. Everything I've had to do in my life is voluntary, so I managed to start my political career whilst at university. I had a student loan, I was living on a narrow boat, and we're in the midst of a pandemic, but I could just about get through campaigning and making my way. And ever since leaving university, I've struggled along with part-time jobs and making ends meet and not having my own home, not owning a car, trying to do whatever I can to make sure that I have resource enough to be able to get leaflets delivered, to be able to meet members of the public, to be able to have the time to go to council meetings. Now I'm a district councillor. Our full council meetings are at 2 o'clock on a Monday. How accessible is that?
I love that.
That's love what that. We have to do. And so as a councillor, I get £650 a month. And I've been really clear and transparent about that. You can go on my website, you can press the link in my Instagram bio, and you can see all of the pay slips I get. And I think it's really important to be transparent about that because not getting a decent income, not having a timetable that works around working people excludes so many of us. And we end up with politicians who are quite often retired, who are doing this as a second job, who are quite wealthy already, and students, people with disabilities, people who've been traditionally pushed out of politics continue to feel that way. And I think we have to make a change there.
That's literally blown my mind. I mean, 2 o'clock on a Monday afternoon, wonderfully well-timed, isn't it? And like you say, it's because the world that politics is used to is those people who would have the time at that time of day and people who have already had their working life. So I think that's really interesting that, you know, you are a bit of a breath of fresh air in that way because you have had to juggle all these other commitments to make your way onto the political stage. So you're clearly somebody who's very well connected to reality, which, as I say, is possibly a first for a politician. But it is clear that you've worked very hard to make these impactful changes that you are making. What would you say, then, motivates you to make a difference?
That's a really big question, a really important question. My desire for change came out of feeling like society wasn't working for me and mm-hmm. people like me. I was never a good kid at school. I wasn't that bad, but I wasn't a good kid. And I didn't know what I wanted to do when I finished my A-levels, and so I took some time out. And as you said at the start of this podcast, I worked and I travelled, and I had plenty of bad bosses. I was shaking cocktails, I was stacking shelves, I was in a bouncy castle factory. I did everything you could imagine.
Not all at the same time, though.
Not all at the same time. That would have been very skillful.
Sorry, carry on.
And I had this experience of the world, and my own struggle of trying to make enough money, trying to find my place in the world, but then also seeing through travelling extreme poverty alongside the most beautiful parts of our world, nature, and then also how polluted that is.
Yeah.
And seeing that firsthand made me realise that something wasn't quite working, that people were suffering and our planet was suffering, and that surely there was a way to make that work, because everything works in harmony. And so I remember being sat on a tuk-tuk in Cambodia and saying to my partner at the time, when we go back, I am going to go and study politics and international relations at university and do everything I can to understand the system, because we've just been excluded from it.
Mm.
And being a creative, I feel that, well, talk about Birmingham, for example. Birmingham City Council is absolutely on the ropes at the moment in terms of bankruptcy. And the first thing they've cut, their arts and culture budget. 100%
always.
Of it gone.
Mm-hmm.
That's the first thing to go. And not that that's the biggest priority always, because there are, you know, people who are suffering and need shelter or food or whatever else it might be. And that is, of course, really important. But what I'm trying to get across is that we don't prioritise certain things in society, and it's always about profit.
Yes.
It's always about money making, and not about people, and not about our communities. And so I wanted to try and understand the system and how it could change, and to put someone like myself, who comes from a different perspective, into the room.
Mm.
So I went and studied the economy and things that I would never have dreamed of talking about, and committed myself to it because we had to make that change.
Mm.
I don't have all the answers, would never claim to have all the answers, but I know that people like me, people like you, do have the answers. And if we come together and we have honest conversation about our lives, about what works in society, what doesn't, then we can find the answers together. And so I'm driven by a need to bring us together. And that's why a large part of what I'm promising as mayor is to have citizens' assemblies, so
yeah.
that everyone has a voice in the decision-making process. But I see myself really as a facilitator, as a leader, as someone who can get into the room for all of us and make sure that our voices are heard. It's not about exactly what I think. It's about doing the right thing and making difficult decisions, of course, but it's making sure we do that based on our shared experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I can really hear that. And it is a very different way of looking at politics and making the difference that way. But I think it's so, so hopeful. And it sounds a little bit, and correct me if I'm wrong, that you're quite driven by the potential goodness of humanity, that we do have it within ourselves to correct this course, that yes, you know, society, systems, the way the world works has not been set up as best it could be for everybody, certainly not as best it could be for the planet, but that we do have the potential, if we just take stock and work together, to turn this around.
Absolutely. I do believe that humans are inherently good and that we want the best for each other. I do believe that. And just yesterday, actually, I was with a group of students at Tupton Hall School, which is where I used to go.
Aww.
And we were having this conversation. They were the politics students, and they were asking me whether I thought that there was an inherent, well, what our natural behaviour
okay,
is,
yeah. Yeah,
and how that impacts politics. And I said to them, and as I'll say to you now, that I think that we are we are forced by the system to look after ourselves. Mm-hmm. We have to go after more and more money. We have to go after cash generation above all else because it protects ourselves and our family. And so we have become ever more isolated. And if you zoomed out and you looked at the world, you would see this hive of activity, all these people working together and moving around. But when you zoom in, we are just thinking about ourselves, just about the individual. And that's changed through the last 30, 40 years, particularly since Margaret Thatcher and Ronald Reagan, and that real idea of you as an individual and ownership. And we have to reverse that and come back to an idea of working together in collaboration. It doesn't mean that our economy takes a hit. It doesn't mean that we as people have to suffer. It doesn't mean we will be colder or poorer. In fact, the opposite is true. We will get better insulated homes and we will have better jobs and we will all thrive and we won't have people who are sleeping on our streets. But until we shift our mentality to realising that there's no freedom for anyone until there's freedom for all, mm-hmm. there's no success for anyone until there's success for all, then we're never going to get there. And so that's about switching the way we measure success, I think.
Definitely. Yeah, I was talking to somebody on another episode of the podcast, and a lot of what we talked about centred around the fact that presently, and certainly over the last couple of decades, exhaustion seems to be falsely extolled as a virtue. Like, you must rinse every single thing out of yourself at the chasing of this ownership, of this success, of this money. And we need to reevaluate what success means. Maybe success means something smaller, more, you know, something that is more individual, but actually connects to a wider community. And I think that's the turning point, getting people to understand that they've been sold this version of success, but it isn't the only one, and actually isn't a very healthy one for ourselves, and certainly not very healthy for the planet or our communities. And that kind of brings me on to thinking about health in terms of our own mental health. And I imagine we all have mental health struggles, and that needs to be the first thing that I say on this, because I've never met another human that hasn't had some form of mental health struggle. Yes, some are much, much worse than others, and this is not competition. But I really want to usualize this kind of conversation. So if you wouldn't mind talking to us maybe a bit about when times have been hard, or how that's played out for your mental health when you are trying to think about such enormous kind of concepts and keep the momentum going for that.
Yeah, that's a really nice transition, and I think it's one that makes sense for me, because when we talk about measuring success, we at the Green Party say that we should be looking, rather than measuring GDP, we should be looking at well-being in society, whether people are educated, whether people have access to healthcare. That is what success looks like to us.
Yeah.
And for me, that's really personal as well, because I have had my own mental health struggles, and I've seen other people I know and love go through similar things as well. I, like I said, graduated during the pandemic, and that for me was, it wasn't the cause of what I was going through, but it was the moment I realised. And so I wasn't in a very good relationship at that time, and I wasn't prioritising myself, and there were various things that were wrong. But I was getting through life with my head down, working hard, and not really ever zooming out and looking at the bigger picture. The pandemic came, and everyone was upset because they were staying at home, they weren't seeing their friends, they weren't going out and doing things. And I remember sitting there and thinking, that's been my life, actually, for quite a number of years.
Yeah.
I haven't been doing those things that I wish I had. And so it really made me take stock of everything. And time went on, and I didn't really do anything to change it until it got to a breaking point. And I wish I had taken action sooner, but it got to a point where I was really in a bad place. I was suicidal. Mm-hmm. I was in a really dark hole, and fortunately I have wonderful family around me that were there for me, It took a lot to speak to them about it. It took a lot to speak to friends about it. But I tried to do everything I could to use my suffering as a way of talking to people, because I thought that if I'm going through this and this is what I'm feeling, what are other people feeling? What don't I know about those that are closest to me? Because I've been keeping this a secret. What else are they going through and how can I help them? And so it's been a really positive thing in some ways that it opened up conversation. But I make no secret of the fact that I've been to therapy. I've got a wonderful therapist, Helen Ackbury. There she is.
Hey, go and look her up. Shout out there for
Helen.
Yeah,
she's wonderful and she's helped me get to the place where I am today. And a wonderful partner who has helped me realise that about putting myself first and changing the way that I live my life and having a bit more belief as well. So there are various steps I've taken to do that, and I make sure that I value my friendship and value my time. During this mayoral campaign, it has been very difficult to find any sense of balance. But it is for a limited amount of time, so I can kind of put up with it. But I can't remember the last time I got my yoga mat out. I can't remember the last time that I was walking through the woods without a care in the world.
Mm.
But that's the world of politics, unfortunately. And so there has to be a culture change there as well.
Completely,
because of how difficult that is. And we've talked about how so many people feel they can't get involved with politics. Well, that's another reason why. Because it is relentless and because it is so designed around suits. Mm. And if you aren't a suit, then you can't participate. And we have to change that.
Yeah.
So there's so much to dig into there, but it's really important and I'm really pleased we can have that conversation.
Yeah, thank you so much for sharing that, because, you know, I'm deeply sorry that you had to go through that. But as you say, it's something that affects so many people, and it's amazing that even in your darkest moments, you still had that ability to think outside of yourself and think, I wonder if other people are going through this, because if I am, they must be. And that does take a special kind of person to be able to dig that deep. And I, you know, this podcast was born out of somebody in my family who had such deep struggles. My dad, who unfortunately, tragically, did take his own life. And this is why I want to be able to talk to somebody as easily as we are sat opposite each other about their mental health. Because, you know, if we saw someone with a broken leg, we wouldn't think twice about going, oh my goodness, how did that happen? Are you okay? Is there anything I can do? Can I carry that for you or whatever? But because we don't wear a badge that says, you know, I'm depressed today or I'm anxious or, you know, or I have a phobia about this or whatever. And then I think people get worried. What if I say the wrong thing? What if I tip them over the edge? Is it then my fault? And like you say, that's a whole other thing, but we need to open that up. So thank you so much for that.
You're absolutely right. And I think it's a change in our culture about talking to people. It really is. And that has to change. And I think I'm now too honest when people ask me how I am.
No, good.
They say, how are you? And they get the truth. And I think it's really important, because if I can do one thing, it's to set a standard that I'll be honest with you, and then hopefully you'll be honest with me as well. And you don't know how I'm feeling today, and I don't know how you're feeling today. And the worst thing we can do is make an assumption and presume how we are feeling, and therefore you behave in a way that isn't right. But being able to talk to people and then model your behaviour around that. And when you don't know, it's fine. You know, I am really happy when people say to me, I don't know how to behave, I don't know what to say.
Yeah.
And we can have an open space where we can talk about it honestly. I don't expect anyone to have any answers, because I don't.
No, it's almost better when they say that they don't know, because then you can say, oh, well, you know, this is what I'd like you to do for me, or don't ask me about that, or whatever. But again, that's a culture shift, isn't it? Because we feel we have to know. We have to fix everything straight away, right now.
The fixing thing. It's a family trait. And my mum would smile listening to this, because the pair of us are desperate to fix things and other people. And it's that's partly why I got into the struggles I was in the past, with trying to help other people too much, more than myself, and particularly in relationships. And it takes a lot to realise that actually it's not up to you to do that.
No.
And you can help other people and be there for people, but ultimately we have to make sure that we're okay.
Yeah. And so you touched briefly on not having got out your yoga mat or gone walking in the woods, which I hope returns very soon. But what kind of stuff do you do when you're not running for mayor to look after your own kind of well-being? What keeps you going?
Well, those are two of the most important things for me. My yoga practice is something that I hold really dear, to me. And when I was going through that difficult time, I actually completed a Ashtanga yoga teacher training course.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, it was completely random, completely out of the blue. I've been practicing, but it's it actually really gave me, it forced me to take time over a period of months to think about things I wouldn't normally think about and really study and prioritize other things and just to think about the world in a different way. And so I was really pleased I did that, and that helped me get to the stage I'm at now. And it's something I still maintain to this day. My partner is actually a yoga teacher, so
fab.
Yeah, really great. I get lots of free classes.
Yeah, I bet.
And so, yeah, being outside, being in nature, being with my family, being with friends, prioritizing those moments is really important. Slowing down, cooking.
I love
used
to cook.
To think cooking was a chore, but actually it's the most wonderful thing.
It's therapy.
It really is.
I love cooking. I'll cook for anybody. I just love it.
Well, I look forward to having a meal, mate.
No, I've just promised to make you some food. You might think I'm awful. But yeah, it is. I totally get that. Loads of people are like, oh, I've got to cook dinner tonight. And I'm like, I really look forward to it. Love cooking. So yeah, that's another thing that, you know, we can do for ourselves, keep ourselves going. Now, as I said, you know, you're running for mayor. Not all of us are going to do that. I definitely don't have the capacity to do that. But I think you'll agree with me. It's true, isn't it, that we can all make a difference? Because that's what we're talking about. We're talking about making a difference. But I think it's easy to feel discounted from making a difference to ourselves or to society because it seems such a massive thing. And I know that we share a passion for making these things accessible to everybody. So could you give us some advice or ideas to anybody listening to support them in beginning to make a difference in terms of themselves, but also to any wider initiatives?
Absolutely. So I've got no special powers. I'm not...
Really? I don't know.
Believe it or not, I'm not some superstar political person. And whilst I've forced myself into that world and tried everything I can to learn about it, it's just come through a commitment to making a difference. And I'm just one of many, many people trying to do that. And throughout my time actually being involved in local politics, I've seen so many other people making a difference. And whether that's other Greens trying to get elected like you have here in Belper.
Yes, Sue Devine, I hope you're listening because you're amazing.
Or it's community groups. So many people that I work with. And actually, I think I forced some people into making a difference that never expected themselves to, who would contact me about local issues. And, for example, in Wingworth, I had lots of people contacting me about the state of the ponds and our nature being completely depleted and having green spaces but no biodiversity. And I was getting so many people get in touch, I thought, right, come together, you get yourselves organised and you become a little group. And that's happened, and those people are making a difference and making that change. But all it really takes is help from other people. And so we have to realise how much stronger we are together, and that each and every one of us has a right to speak up, has that agency, and that it's our world as much as it is anyone else's. I think sometimes we think that there's some big system or someone else that we can't see dealing with things or with the power. And that's true. But when we open the curtain and peek behind it, we realise that they're just people just like me and you. And I often tell this story. Well, Toby Perkins, the MP for Chesterfield, might not be so happy if I do, but...
Oh, hey-ho.
I went and did a school visit a little while ago, and I remember walking into a staff room and seeing him in there with his two advisors, and he was sat trying to eat a shepherd's pie off a plate with a plastic fork and struggling a little bit. And as I walked into the room, I just thought it was the most mundane situation I'd ever seen from someone who's a superior politician who's in our parliament. And I was about to go out on... you know, to a stage and have a debate with him. And it really made me think before I went out there that he is no different to me. He's some guy with a plastic fork trying to eat a shepherd's pie and in a school staff room. And that could be any one of us.
Yeah.
And we're all just making it up as we go along. That's the thing. And when you realise everybody else is acting, everybody's just trying to make it up, it actually gives you a power to think, well, I'm going to give it a go as well.
I can do that, yeah.
I'm no politician. I've got no, you know, polished haircut and living in London. And
designer suit.
Polished shoes. And you realise you don't actually need that. All you need is a voice and the confidence to do that. And I know that not everyone has the start in life to do that. And that's another thing we need to talk about, is about the privilege and opportunity that some people have to make a difference. And other people don't have that.
Mm-hmm.
And what we have to do in the political world is give more power to people, to our communities, to make their voice heard collectively, but also to feel that they've got the tools themselves to stand up and to be able to challenge what's happening in their world.
Yeah, yeah, I completely understand what you're saying there. And I'm quite a visual person, and I'm really sort of thinking about that idea that everybody does have a voice. It's just getting them to the point where they have the confidence to use it. And maybe that does start with them providing a bit more self-care for themselves, or asking somebody to help them, because we're not good as humans at asking for help. We are very, very bad at it, and we need to be better, because we should ask for help from our neighbours, from our friends, because, as you say, humans are generally good. We would want to help somebody if they need it, but we never ask for our own support. So start making some changes with ourselves. Get that confidence that you can say, well, actually, no, I don't agree with this. Or I think we need to make a change about the, you know, the way the village hall is used or whatever. Just these little things can connect you to the community, connect you to yourself. And I just really hope that Toby, like, calls his autobiography Shepherd's Pie in a Plastic Fork, because if he doesn't...
I will.
Yes!
If he doesn't, I will.
Yeah, you will. So there you go. Challenge laid down on that one. So, as we said, the benefits of getting involved in a community project and self-care are incredible. And as I am an emotional well-being professional, I advocate strongly for starting with yourself and working your way outwards. Because together we do create such a strong, positive foundation. Now, you have clearly made some inspirational changes. So I'm going to ask you to tell me the top three differences you are most proud of in your career to date.
I think the biggest one for me is being able to stand up for people who look at me and think, I'm like you. And that has given so many people a reason to go and vote. That is the biggest difference I think I've made. And I don't really mind if they vote for me or vote for someone else. But the fact that people think, I want to get engaged with politics, even if they see the stuff I'm putting out there on my Instagram, and they disagree with me and they think I'm going to vote against this guy, at least they're getting out there and they're making their voice heard. So that's one of the biggest things for me. I always said when I got involved with politics, there was never really a goal I was aiming for. It was just to get involved and to try and make a difference. But I always said the one thing I would love to achieve is if I can get one more person politically active, then I've doubled the amount of people in my world that are politically active.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen that happen time and time again, and that makes me really happy. And every time someone reaches out and says, I'm voting for you, or I'm joining the Green Party, and it happens, honestly, it happens so often.
Yeah.
It makes me so proud. It's wonderful. So that's one huge difference, which I've done. And then, I guess more tangibly, one of the first projects I ever got involved with was in the local community and was a tree planting scheme. And we planted 500 trees in the village, and it came with so many problems. We tried to do something as a community, and we got trees planted in the ground, and bureaucracy of councils meant that that project was nowhere near as successful as it should have been. But what it made me realise is that when people come together and have a plan, we can do something.
Yeah.
But we need more power and agency to do it. So there are so many people that want to make that positive change and haven't been able to. But it was the first thing that I ever really felt like, I can go out into my community and I can see these trees.
Yeah, this physical difference.
They're there and they're going to be there. And that was really, really lovely. And that was a big difference. That was one of the first things I did where I thought, we can actually make a change.
Yeah.
And even though it didn't work as well as we would have liked it to, because the council, the higher authority came to us and said, well, we own this little bit of park, you have to dig them up and move them, which was very, very petty.
Yeah.
We still thought, well, we've done this, and we did it as a community, and we did it with our parish council, and it was that first time I recognised that change.
Mm.
And finally, the third thing I've done that makes a difference, I'm going to come back to what we were talking about before about well-being and community and people and conversation. And I think probably that's the thing that matters the most to me is listening. So many people say to me, thank you for taking the time to have a conversation with me. Mm. And I say to every single one of them, that is my job. And the fact that people don't expect that from politicians is really, really quite depressing.
Yeah.
I'm here to be a voice for you. And even if you disagree with me, even if our views are polar opposites and we are never, ever going to vote the same way, we have to try and find a solution because at the end of the day, we live in the same community, in the same country, on the same planet. And obviously you're feeling what you're feeling for a reason and I'm feeling what I'm feeling for a reason. And both of those are perfectly legitimate, perfectly valid. And we have to find, okay, well, why is this happening? Why are we feeling the way we're feeling? And so often there are the same problems, but we're just reading them in a different way.
Yeah.
And when we have those conversations, there's a way to bring people together. So I'm really proud of my work that I've done to listen to people, to try and make myself accessible as a politician. And I think that's made the biggest difference. And I think it makes people feel, I hope it makes people feel, like they can input because ultimately they should be able to. We are their political representatives. These are their political systems. And ultimately, this is our world.
Yeah. And I think, I mean, there are three incredible, incredible things to be able to list already. And, you know, the well-being and the bringing people together, that is going to have a long tail impact. That's not just something that, you know, is one and done. That is bringing people together, getting those conversations going, and it's almost that snowball effect, and then they bring people in and they have those conversations. And we were talking before we started recording about, you know, the fact that religion, politics, everything seems to have polarized so much. And we need to come back to that middle ground of being able to hold our own opinion, but respectfully have a conversation with someone and understand where they're coming from. Time, I think, is, you know, we are a time poor society because we lead ourselves to feel time poor. We're trying to do everything quicker, faster, more, everything's more. And actually, it is about that slowing down and taking the time to understand and dig underneath things. That's the way the change is going to happen. So, Frank, I could literally sit and talk to you forever, but apart from I might need the odd loo, coffee and snack break, but, you know, I know that you are beyond busy, so I will wrap it up with an impassioned, beyond impassioned thank you for making the time to come on The Way Forward today and share your amazing lived experience and insights, you know, with the people who are listening.
Thank you ever so much for having me.
You're so welcome. And you can follow Frank and access his trailblazing work and resources by going down to the show notes and finding all his contact information. Also, if you are in the East Midlands and you're heading to the polling booth on the 2nd of May, then vote for Frank. Absolutely zero shame declaring my colours there. That is it for today. And remember, if you are ready to prioritise you and work on anything relating to your emotional well-being and empowerment in a fully supported way, then just head to codesignwithfliss.com and let's begin your journey to a more emotionally fulfilled future. Thank you so much for listening. Now we know more about making a difference, and now we know the way forward.